All right. Welcome to another edition of Presidio Bitcoin Jam.
We're back.
How are you guys doing?
Great.
It's Friday.
It's a beautiful Friday.
It's so gorgeous out. Oh my God. I love it.
Dude, on a day like today, San Francisco, promised land.
It shines. Yeah.
It's amazing.
I just like walked over, got my orange. I'm just feeling good in the sun.
Oh yeah. Me too.
Got the glow.
A little bit of a breeze.
Like, yeah.
I climbed Mount Tam.
You did?
Did you really?
That's my new Friday.
This morning?
On my bike.
Oh, I saw your Strava. Was that? I didn't really.
I mean, I went to Rock Springs. I got to 2,000 feet.
Oh, okay, you got called out. DK's watching.
I wasn't studying. I looked at your pictures. They looked nice.
It is great. I mean, it's like very foggy where my house is, but above 700 feet, beautiful blue sky.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's unusual, no? Because like San Francisco is usually
it's common
foggier
on Tam to be foggy in Tam Valley, and then above 700 feet. Blue sky.
Nice. Well, I've been thrilled because I've been sitting in my garden and you guys know I've been getting really into this whole farming.
Yeah, yeah.
Gardening, whatever. Farming sounds better.
Part of your self-sovereignty.
Part of my
umbrella.
It really is though. And
what are you farming?
All kinds of good stuff.
Okay.
I don't know what I can discuss in the show.
California, it's all legal.
Well, it's California, it's all legal, and it's California, so it's perfect weather all year round. Because like we kept looking at the seeds and be like, you're supposed to plant this in this season. And I was like, I think you just plant anything anytime in San Francisco. But what's great is, I'm trying a variety of different things. So I have some greens, and then I have some like gourds, like squash or pumpkins. The mistake I think I've made, but like I like to just try stuff and see what sticks, right? Is I probably planted too much. And so we're going to see this sort of like, I don't know, competition among the plants play out for like who's going to survive or not. But it's great. And I really do feel like, and I told you guys about this kind of wild book, The Secret Life of Plants. I feel a connection with them. And it's great because we had so much rain, although I had to travel in the rain, which we'll talk about. That was super not fun. But like with the rain comes all the life. And so I just feel like every time I walk back in there, it's just like exploding with oxygen. Yeah. So fresh, so clean.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It's good. So can you do, are there seasons in California for like when gourd season is, or can you just do that?
So DK, I mean, the answer is probably yes, but I literally have just like, I've done zero research.
Yeah.
And, but it's great because everything is sprouting. And now again, what's crazy is you'll see, like I have a tomato plant. Now the tomato plant is kind of coming over the beets and kind of stealing the light. So, gosh, I need to get more space.
Can you bring tomatoes in? Because my dad grows tomatoes.
When I get a tomato.
They are like 10 times better than store-bought tomatoes.
It's so true.
It is like shockingly better.
I have one tomato plant and no tomatoes yet. When I do, I will bring you one.
Yeah.
Or we can even share one here, perhaps on the pod.
Yeah.
You can watch us live. But there
you
are-
put salt on your tomato?
Yeah, sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Is that an Iowa thing or you guys have
it's an Italy
it?
Thing.
Olive oil.
olive oil, burrata. Yeah.
But it
just means salt.
You can do that too.
Yeah. Just salt.
Sure.
That sounds southern.
Steve is Midwest.
Memphis, Iowa.
Yeah, exactly. Memphis and Iowa State. I always got the connection, a little fried chicken and a little tomato. But anyways, but I think the cool, so I've noticed, our dog Roy, shout out to baby Roy, he loves like the spinach and the arugula and the greens, and it tastes, to your point, so much fresher than the crap you get at the supermarket. So self-sovereignty, but also just like I think there's so much you can learn and study about just the nature of like everything, like software development. Like you're seeing in real time ecosystems emerge in the same way that we're watching. Like I feel like I'm learning more about, in many ways, open source software development from my garden than like almost anything else. Cause you see, you plant these seeds and some things thrive.
Are your plants more like core or not?
My plants would never be not. that's offensive. But yeah.
Does TBJ have a stance on this stuff?
I don't want to get into that again. Right. My plants are much more fun. But anyways, yeah. So highly recommend gardening.
Well, I've got a pretty productive lemon tree. Have I given you any lemons? We got Meyer lemons that just grow like crazy. So we're always trying to give them away. And
nice.
They wouldn't go so well in green tea, but other teas.
Okay. Some like water too.
Water.
Lemon
yeah.
water.
Yeah. yeah. But we use it in everything we cook.
Well, if you bring a bunch in, we can make lemonade.
Yeah, yeah. And when life hands you lemons.
There you go. DK makes us lemon water.
And we want to do persimmon. I think you can do persimmon around here.
What is persimmon?
It's almost... It's a little more like maybe an apple pear, but it's orange colored.
Oh, yeah.
But it's kind of sweet. Put cinnamon on it. We get them at the farmer's market all the time.
All right.
It's really good.
All right.
But we're here to talk about the signal from the noise.
Ooh. Right?
Ooh.
DK,
separate them.
Did you practice that?
No.
This man operates in real time. There's no prep.
A real
no
showman.
Yeah. So Signal, what's the website?
So I think it was Signal for Bitcoin. Bitcoin for Signal.
Bitcoin for Signal.org.
Which be careful, because when you click on it, it looks like it's Signal's website. I'm like, oh, Signal's incorporating Bitcoin. Interesting. And then I was like, okay, I don't know anything about
this. This is an advocacy campaign. Yeah.
But it's branded as if it's Signal, but it's actually somebody else who's not involved in Signal directly, but wants to contribute to making Signal more Bitcoin-centric.
Yeah. All right. I believe Jack's been a proponent in pushing Signal to adopt Bitcoin and Cash for a while. At BTC++ in Berlin, 2 weeks ago now, the hackathon project that won was adding Cash and eCash to a fork of Signal.
And Signal is all open source, right? So anyone could fork it and add it.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so, and then Eric, who was visited Presidio Bitcoin a couple of weeks ago for the design week, and he works on Cashew as a designer, part of the Bitcoin design community. I think he worked on the website design and as well as the design in the app. And I'm sure Callie was involved, and I don't know who all is involved other than them, but they launched this website, which it's an advocacy website trying to encourage Signal to do that. One notable thing about the website is that they use the Bitcoin B symbol instead of sats. So
that's everywhere now, by the way.
More and more people are adopting that.
By the way, is a clarifying question, because I'm seeing more and more people. I've seen it now, obviously, with Square, which we'll talk about now with some of the Cashew stuff. I think Albi even has like that now, too. How do you feel about using that symbol but calling it sats?
Yeah, I'm very much at peace with that. So, okay. I mean, where my the evolution of my own thinking, and I think other advocates of the Bitcoin B symbol, is that people can speak whatever they want.
I like it.
So don't police people's speech. People can call it sats, corn, coins,
corn.
Bitcoin, you know, bits, whatever. Say what you want.
This is the Gen Alpha way to do that.
What is this?
It's like the Gen Alpha way to do like this.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Why do you know this?
We hosted dinner with some kids.
Right.
some friends. Really young.
Learn something every day.
like 22, not like 12.
All right. No judgment. So say what you want. But the main push and thrust, I would say, is like in the visual UI.
Yeah.
Show the Bitcoin B symbol and not the word sats.
Yeah.
And everyone who's seen that, I think, instantly gets converted.
Yeah, me too. I love it.
So it's far less controversial than like sort of demanding that people stop saying sats or whatever. I went through a period of time not saying sats just to see how it felt. And now I say sats. Nothing wrong with
you're
saying
bad. All right. All right. Okay. Anyway. Simple though. I like it.
Yeah. So that was notable from the website. But let's talk more about Signal, Bitcoin and Signal. Actually, going back to all the way back to 2019 when I first started at Block and Spiral, Square Crypto at the time.
Yeah,
I met at that time. I want Bitcoin and Signal. I mean, I was already like a heavy Signal user, and I want Bitcoin and Signal. So I reached out to Moxie, who was still at Signal at the time, and met with him. He was in San Francisco, so we met for a coffee, and you know, I asked him, but you know, I made the pitch, but also just wanted to hear his perspective. And you know, he had a very reasonable perspective. He wasn't against it at all. And this is pre-mobile coin. Pre-mobile coin in the product. I think he had already like was working with Josh Goldbart, is it, on mobile coin. But I didn't know that at the time.
Yeah.
So, but he said, you know, the three things that were important to him and for Signal were all reasonable things. Privacy.
Sure.
The self-custody, like managing keys, like it needs to be brain dead simple. Like they can't have their users like losing their money because they mismanaged their keys.
Yep.
And at the same time, Signal didn't want to be a financial services company or, you know, MSB. So self-custody. And then the third was just UX scaling fee, like low fees. Mm-hmm. And scaled up all their users.
Right.
You know, all that's like totally reasonable.
And if they were to help you manage your private keys, would that cause them to become an MSB? Or you can do that without becoming an MSB?
Well, it depends.
Well, I just mean you can protect the user from losing their keys if you don't give them keys. So if like Cash App, like you can't lose your keys because Cash App has the keys.
Right.
But there also could be gray.
But Cash App's an MSB.
Right.
Signal doesn't want to be an MSB. So I don't know if I got your question. So Signal doesn't want to be an MSB. That suggests like some variation or flavor of non-custodial or self-custodial, which we can get into that topic later too, because that continues to...
Like if Signal were to say like, hey, we'll let you log in with your phone number and we'll help decrypt keys that you have. You can also have the 12 words and go away on a different place. So we're not like controlling it. We're just like helping you with it.
Yeah, there's a variety of solutions to like back up your private keys. Mm-hmm.
Photon
Project and MoonWallet has a solution and BitKey has a solution. I mean, there's lots of,
And if you do that, you don't run into any risk really of MSP. Mm.
Well, again, it's a gray area. Like for MoonWallet, I think they let you just back it up encrypted in your Apple Drive or Google Drive, I think.
Yeah.
Which I think is probably fine. So,
oh, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a variety of solutions on how to manage your own private keys. And if it's self-custody, then it's not an MSP. Yeah. But it's anyway, this is 6 years ago.
Yeah.
A lot of there's been a lot of progress in the last 6 years. But the his criteria was he doesn't want their users to lose money. He doesn't want to be an MSB.
Yep.
That's reasonable. Yep. So all those are reasonable. And then over time, and then I quickly learned how how much work we have to do to be able to deliver on those three requirements. The good news is, if you look at the past 6 years, there's been tremendous progress. On all those fronts. But again, as we've talked about on several episodes in the show, there's still no one solution that checks all boxes super, super strongly. There's trade-offs.
Did they have a fourth requirement, though? Which was to do a giant cash grab in the process.
Yeah. Well, then in the interim, they integrated MobileCoin, which I always thought was a joke for all the typical pre-mine token reasons. But yeah. I mean, what MobileCoin did deliver, though, it was based on SGX, just like Signal is.
Yeah.
It did offer nice privacy properties. It offered a way to scale and provide self-custody, but to the degree that you trust SGX. But at the end of the day, there's no demand for mobile. No one's ever heard of MobileCoin. Right. There's no demand for it.
Is it even, I didn't even know, can you turn it on in Signal? I've never even seen it.
Yeah.
Like, where is that? Is it like buried
if
in
you
settings?
Go, if you go to, yeah. I mean, there's a wallet. If you go to settings, there's a wallet.
I'm curious.
But you have to like buy it at some exchange and then deposit it into your Signal wallet?
Yeah.
So that seems...
Like, yeah. I mean, it's not a mystery. It's not a mystery that it has not caught on.
Do you think that the Signal team is kind of... I saw on the... Was it bitcoinforsignal.org or whatever? On the website, they kind of made a claim that, mobile coin's not really going anywhere. And do you think that the Signal team has come to that conclusion, or do you think they still are pushing MobileCoin to be a thing?
I know as much as you do about that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm curious. Has anyone...
I highly doubt. I mean, I have no idea, but I would guess. I mean, Moxie's, as far as I know, no longer involved in Signal, and Meredith has been the CEO or president or whatever, the leader for several years.
And didn't they
I
get
would
a...
guess that Meredith has no... She probably wasn't part of the pre-mined token.
Right.
She didn't get rich off of it.
Right.
So she probably doesn't have any mobile coin baggage. So I would guess she's just like it's not a priority. Let's get rid of this thing. Or that would be my guess.
And was that all before, I think, was it Jan Koum from WhatsApp came in and gave him $50 million or something?
That predated all the stuff.
That was all before the mobile coin started.
Yeah.
So I'm curious. Obviously, I don't think it looks like either of you guys have used mobile coin. Is anyone listening to the pod, please drop in the chat if you have. Like, I've never seen anyone do it. I'm curious if there's a single mobile coin user out there. I'd be curious to learn about that. But if not,
despite us having a very large live audience, I'm still guessing no one listening has used mobile coin.
This is a scientific study where if no one in our extremely large live audience answers, like clearly Signal, this is your signal to switch. I think this is such just an important story over and over. I mean, I have a ton of questions for where Signal ended up, and by the way, I think we mentioned last week, Meredith Whitaker is now on Auster, which seems like a great, great sign. So she can see the power of like, oh, wait, you know, there's already, you know, hundreds of thousands of users that have access to Bitcoin on here and stuff like that. But I think this is like the one message to just hammer home over and over and over again to everyone is open networks versus closed networks. And I know we'll talk more about this in other contexts later today, but like if I could just like hammer one idea home to big tech as they think about how to like integrate payments into their apps, you can either adopt an intranet, which is your network, or a private network, or you can adopt the internet. We all know how this story plays out. Intranet, you don't get network effects. People don't use your product. There's always going to be a walled garden. You're AOL. Nope. Internet, you win.
Novell NetWare.
Yeah.
Who in our audience has heard of it? Have you heard of Novell NetWare?
Yeah. No, I thought that was...
Really?
I thought that was like Phelan Fusk.
Seriously?
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
That's interesting. That shows an age gap between us.
Novell Wetware?
NetWare. IPX. It was like a dominant... It was the dominant networking software.
Like in the 80s. I mean, I knew of it.
In the early 90s.
Okay. It was
the dominant networking software, and then Microsoft had their own networking software, which tried to compete, and then ultimately, obviously the internet won out.
I mean, I started,
but I played video games that were.
It was competing at like on TCP/IP layer.
Really? Wow! It was competing with TCP/IP.
IPX. Yeah. I recall.
Okay.
I mean, this is so a long time ago, but IPX I believe was
behind it.
Novell. Have you never heard of Novell?
Never heard of Novell is. But this is my point.
It was Cisco, right?
Signal. Do you want to be Novell? Every tech company, do you want to be Novell or do you want to be Google? Like, come on. I've never heard of this.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll do a
history lesson for the youngins.
Just so you guys know, I mean, my dad was like a reasonably early adopter of stuff on the internet because he's into like the weird long tail of comic books and like bizarre art stuff. So he was an early user on eBay. But I had probably watched him use that around 95 or 96.
Have you heard of Sun Microsystem?
Yes, I do.
Eric Schmidt.
Okay. Well,
I mean, I believe, if I recall correctly, Sun bought Novell when Eric was the CEO.
Sounds right.
Huh.
Yeah. And then he became CEO of Google.
So. But I do remember that great, I always go back to this clip, I don't know if it was 95 or 96, of Bill Gates being interviewed by one of Letterman or one of these late night shows or something. And he just kept going, I was like, the information's super high.
Right.
And then you just look back at that and you're like, I would just like play that clip for Stripe or Signal for anyone that's like, do I do it at my own intranet or go to the internet?
Yeah. Totally agree.
Yeah. Anyways.
So, okay. So Signal, you know, flirted with a mobile coin that didn't go anywhere. Surprise, surprise. Yeah. And so there's a push to integrate Bitcoin, but let's talk about the specific campaign, which is adding
Cashew.
So going back to the criteria Moxie set forth, which I think is completely reasonable. If I were in charge of Signal product, I'd demand the exact same.
Yeah.
So privacy, well, at least the no KYC version of Cashew checks that box quite nicely. And then the scaling UX low fees checks that box nicely. Then the custody, self-custody, Signal not being an MSP, this is where it gets a lot more interesting. So it's not self-custody, even though some Cashew and eCash proponents claim it's self-custody. That's a whole discussion topic we can have. So we can go down that thread. But before we do that, I mean, what is definitely clear is that some third party is running a server and has the private keys to the Bitcoin. So not the end users. That is a factual, right?
Does the distinction come down to what you consider money? Like if you consider Bitcoin money, then
let's get into that topic. Okay. I mean, let's definitely talk about that, but I just want to get to the other point, which is who's going to run the mint, right? Which
This is the money shot question over and over.
So who's going to run the mint? And then we can also talk about is it self-custody or not? I think the most critical question here, though, is who's going to run the mint?
Where does the yield come from?
But because running a mint without KYC, I'm not a lawyer, but I think that's definitively illegal. So you're a regulated company is not going to do that unless they run it as a, unless they license KYC it as an MSB and then have an AML program and do KYC. That is one option. But with Signal, I don't think KYC is going to be an option because Signal's all about privacy, mm-hmm. right? So it would need to be no KYC cashew. So I don't think, you know, an organization as prominent and US-based like Signal, I just don't see how they could possibly run the Mint and think it's kosher and not get in trouble. I just don't see how it's possible. So there's certainly, there's at least dozens, if not more, Mint that exists today. And I think, there's a directory, a website you can go to and look at a bunch of Mints. And there's some kind of reputation scoring of them and using Nostr, how long they've been alive.
Is that
stuff.
Something so, Bob built or something?
Yeah, I think Bob's been involved.
Bitcoin Mint.
So there's no doubt, as a early adopter or, advocate of this, if you want to use any cashew wallet, you can definitely use one of these Mints you find. If you're just putting spending money or just a small amount of money in it, that seems completely reasonable to me. And then you get a lot of benefit from, on the UX side, scaling, privacy, et cetera, and just usability. So, but if we look at it from Signal's perspective, let's put our Signal product manager hat on. What would Signal do? Because it doesn't seem realistic to me that Signal will present to their users, go to bitcoinmints.com and pick your mint.
Right.
I don't think they would do that. Right. Maybe it's debatable. I'd be interested in someone who takes the other side of that and understand. But let's just, I'll try to steal, right? Actually, I won't steal Anna because I don't know. I'll point out why.
Bob's UX had a pretty good version of this where it's just pick a default, right?
Here's I see two problems with picking a mint from an anon. You don't really know anything about who's running this mint.
Well, you do have the reputation. It's not an anon. It's a pseudon.
Let's talk about that as well because that can easily be gamed and Sybil attacked, etc. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, one concern is obviously that they just steal the money. They rug pull you. Yeah. Again, if that's a small amount of money, toy play money that you're using to do this or that, it's kind of a bummer, but not devastating to you as a user. But if you think about it from the perspective of Signal, imagine that happens to 10% of their user base, tens of millions of people all have their money stolen from them. Even if it's $2 or $12 bucks or $40 or $50 each, that's not good for your brand. It's not good for Bitcoin brand either, right?
That's terrible.
So, but the second concern is not theft, but just, someone running a mint and they no longer want to run the mint. Maybe they're worried about legal liability. Maybe they're just tired of doing the operations. Maybe it grows so much that they're they get scared. I was okay with $5,000 in this mint, but now there's $5 million or $50 million or $500 million in this mint, and they get scared and they shut it down.
Yep.
So when they shut it down, how do you get your money back? Yep. The only way you can do it, each user has to proactively take a step to move their money elsewhere.
Yep. Yep.
So what does that look like? I personally experienced this with the Fetty app. I, put some money in Fetty. It was in some mint, and then that mint, they shut the mint down. I literally don't know who was running the mint. They shut the mint down. I don't think they were trying to steal the money. It was early and they just wanted to shut it down. I didn't get a push notification, so I didn't even know. And then my money's gone.
Yeah.
Even if Signal were to do a push notification to 100 million people saying move your money, that's a horrible user experience. Then what percentage of those users? Yeah, how big a window of time? A mint operator might give a 90-day window, or they might be just I'm out, or 1 day or whatever. But even if it's 90-day window, what percentage of the users actually see the notification, act on the notification? Yep. People are busy in their life, so I just don't see a credible way for Signal to run a mint themselves or to rely on third parties. The only way that I could see them relying on a third party is if a, a very established brand like Coinbase or Block or River or Lightspark or whatever, Fidelity, JP Morgan, whatever, some established brand that says we're running a mint. But the only way they're going to be able to do that is if the KYC. And then Signal could just do it themselves as well. But that, again, that seems to break the requirement of that Signal doesn't want to KYC their users.
I have a ton of questions of this, but let's start with the KYC piece. Is it that they don't want to KYC the users at all, or is there some middle ground? For example, you know, my understanding, and I know Bob is much deeper on this, but is that there's still a lot of gray area on like what exactly you need, because you can KYC a user in and you have to have some kind of like risk management or AI system to like guess whatever, who's who. But like once you have the tokens out, the tokens are out. And to be clear, the tokens, and this will get into the self-custody thing, think of it as a Chuck E. Cheese token that's private, but it represents whatever's in the mint, Bitcoin, dollars, whatever. So once you have the tokens, you know, if you have to KYC to get it, I wonder if that would be okay with Signal if you do it through their app. But once you have it, they don't know what you're doing with it. And they can't. Like, that's by definition. So maybe there's a, you know, middle ground.
But just, I actually don't even, I mean, historically with Signal, all you have to provide is your phone number. And I think they
How do you get mobile coin?
I think they've even, like, obviated that. It's been forever since I signed up for mobile or for Signal. But
how do you get mobile coin? You have to buy that, I'm sure on a registered exchange. I mean, the other thing that Signal...
But that has nothing to do with Signal.
Well, somehow they got mobile coin in there, right? So like if they wanted to...
You can be KYC'd on a regulated exchange. You can buy mobile coin, you can send it or whatever.
So then what's the difference here? They could do the same thing. They could just say, hey, we don't know who's going to run the mints, but like we just open it up and like figure it out yourself. The other thing Signal could do, and by the way, the more I hear you talk about this, the more I'm like, they should just integrate Lightning probably as a first step, because that's probably private enough. People can get Bitcoin much easier. You know, the cashew thing it's cool because of the privacy, but maybe adds too much complexity. But the other thing they can just do is, and I've said this many times on the show, I still want someone to build this, maybe it should be Signal, is just have local Bitcoins or local cashew built into the app and just do everything peer-to-peer.
But let's, I'm happy to cover Arc, Spark, and Lightning and Kibera, but like let's thoroughly cover cashew though, because that's what's announced now and there's a push behind it.
Yeah.
And I mean, for anyone listening, like I'm an advocate for eCash, for Cashew. Yeah, Spiral funds too. Cashew developers, so I'm not a hater on Cashew at all. And I'd love to see it work out. I'd love nothing more to see a great Bitcoin. I'd check all three boxes of Moxies for Signal and have Bitcoin, no question. I'm just left with this question of who's going to run the mint. As far as your idea of like, oh, let's just do it like mobile coin where you acquire Bitcoin on a mint somewhere else and then bring it into Signal. I don't see how that differs from what I said earlier, which is sort of like just a bitcoinmints.com directory. Meaning that the risks of that seem the same.
Yeah, but I would say what's the difference between... So if specifically on the KYC point, they don't want to KYC users, they want supported mobile coin. They still support mobile coin. My point is the vast majority of people that got mobile coin, like they punted on that. Because they're not KYCing and selling mobile coin, as far as I understand. But let's say 90% of their users that are getting mobile coin are probably doing it on Coinbase or one of these registered exchanges, which requires KYC. And if they really want to do peer-to-peer, like that's also, I'm sure there's like a tiny market if anyone actually uses this. So why can't they do the same thing? Like find your own mint. It's not our problem.
Yeah. We'll see. At minimum, I don't think people will use it then.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm just saying the KYC point is no different to me in those two, because if you're using mobile coin, they already support that. Most of their users would have had to KYC practically.
But so like, let's walk through what would, like I open Signal and I'm shown some splash screen saying like, we support Bitcoin now. Mm-hmm. And then like, let's walk through what the copy is or like, what are the instructions to the user? So that to deposit here, but that, okay, what does here mean? Does that mean their Signal's running a mint?
No, it just like literally they just say, I mean, ideally, I think they should do Bitcoin too, but it's like, okay, we'll set you up with a self-custodial cashew wallet. I don't know exactly how they'll do that, like backup maybe.
Who's will though? That has to be connected to some mint somewhere, right? Like you're going to have a wallet that's going to connect to a mint?
Well, can't they say just bring your own?
But here's, because like with mobile coin, yes, so you can go buy it elsewhere and then deposit here, like you just said. But the Signal is running mobile coin, right? Or they're using a third party. I mean, they have a mobile coin node.
Yes, but I guess my point is like...
And so if they're not running a mint, then what does it mean to deposit Bitcoin into Signal?
Well, I mean, they could just say, click here to create a self-custodial cashew wallet where you get a cashew wallet from. Like, here are some suggestions. We suggest using the internet.
A cashew wallet or a mint?
Not a mint, like a wallet. Like, all they're saying is like, hey, here's a cashew wallet. And we don't provide any cashew in there. And we suggest you figure out how to get cashew. Here's some ideas. Use the internet and you find where you get the cashew from. Like, I mean, I don't see that's different from mobile coin because you still have to go to Coinbase.
No, it's very different. So like if from the Signal app, if I have to then, if they're like, here are three cashew wallet options. Mm-hmm. And then I click on the first one and then it bounces out to an app or a website or whatever, which is a cashew wallet. Mm-hmm. And then that cashew wallet somehow, you know, chooses a mint for me or I have a directory or whatever. And I get tokens. That's not an integrated experience. Well, that's a completely separate app. Where mobile coin wallet is literally integrated into Signal.
Got it. So what I'm thinking is, and perhaps this is a bit more complex, I don't know exactly how this would work, but is that they help the user set up a self-custodial wallet. And maybe it's like, you know, okay, we back up your keys. We never see them. Maybe it's in the secure element in your phone. I don't know how they would do that. But what they could then do is forward payments for you. And I think they would just need to run a lightning node that, right? Like if you send a cashew, you would have to use a cashew mint that's hooked up to Lightning and they could be kind of like your LSP for routing that payment. I guess what I'm trying to say is there a way they could do this without ever having to touch cashew themselves? All they have to do is touch Bitcoin in the background. And then they set you up with, here's how you set up a custodial wallet.
I don't think so. Unless it's not an integrated experience and then it's not interesting at all.
But why couldn't it be an integrated experience if you have a self-custodial wallet?
What do you mean by self-custodial wallet?
I mean, they can't see your keys. Similar to how they...
So you have a separate app keys.
But why couldn't they do this in the app where it's like, I don't know how this would work exactly, but they're like, okay, you have a set of keys. Like, they can't see your encryption keys for Signal, right? Is that correct? Like, if I had the Signal app, they can't see my encryption keys. I'm pretty sure. I would hope not.
I would guess that's correct. True.
Yeah. So why can't they just be like, okay, we're attaching to those same set of encryption keys. I mean, I don't know like what the spec would have to be for that. Maybe you have to have a separate set of keys, but ideally one set of keys. Attached to those keys, you can literally send, like imagine like an Oster address. You can send Bitcoin here.
But is it a layer one wallet, a Lightning wallet, Spark, Arc?
So what I'm thinking
what are the keys to?
Well, doesn't the way cashew work is that can I just have a key, like a key where I send cashew to, like an address? Isn't that, it's the same thing, no? Isn't it, I don't know if it's interoperable as a Bitcoin key. I don't know if it uses the same curve or just not worth it.
Cashew, you have, the data you have are just tokens.
Individual tokens.
Which is just a data string.
I see.
I think we're kind of confusing the issue a little bit here because like, I love the vision for having Signal with Bitcoin readily available. But what are we hoping? Are we hoping that Signal integrates this and then that somehow like makes this thing take off through Signal's distribution? Because all of these things feel so confusing and how do you do it? Whereas if I were in charge, like I love the vision that we're talking about, but if I were in charge of Signal, I'd be like, show me the growth of all of this usage and activity outside. Because a lot of people use like things like Venmo, they send over, you know, WhatsApp and iMessage and whatever. Even like iMessage, I think has its proprietary payment as part of it, but I don't think I've ever used it. I use like Venmo and Zelle because that's like what, you know, service
providers
want.
That's an interesting topic too. I mean, it gets into like what are the use cases.
But I do want to just touch on this one thing before we jump in that because I think this is important. And it's been a while since I've looked at all the details in this, but I thought like Pablo's big breakthrough was that quote unquote, the cashew, the nut is in the NPub. And so my understanding was you could literally have an NPub, so a Nostr private key or a Nostr public key, which is the same as a Bitcoin key. And in that key, you could have your cashew tokens attached to that key and it could be stored in relay. So in a way, what they would have to do is support Nostr relays where the NPub is stored. And I don't know exactly how that works, but I thought that was like the big breakthrough that Pablo had. And if that's the case, then I don't see how, if they give you this NPub, you can't send tokens. And if someone's listening, they can correct me. I know I'm probably getting some of the technical details wrong, but like that I just remember Pablo kept saying over and over again, the cashew is in the key.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe we'll do homework after the show, because if there's a path there, obviously I'd love to learn it.
But critically, the key insight that I remember is you're storing it in the relays. Like, you can bring, as long as you have your private key, you can access your eCash in whichever relays you've selected to store it. Yeah. So it's more of a call for Signal to integrate Nostr, which, okay, we'll figure this out for next time.
But so I still have the question, who will run the Mint, and no one's been able to answer that.
That seems like
yet.
The hard one. And
that's
think
the only question that matters.
Asset Forever, is it?
Oh, well, I just, like, I would like to be an advocate. I'd like to go yell and scream and do whatever I can to get Bitcoin and Signal and via Cashew, but I'm not, because if I put my Meredith hat on or the PM of Signal hat on, I would be asking who will run the Mint. And so until I can answer that better, I don't see how I can be a champion for that method.
How far are we from, we've talked before about an AI agent running the Mint that
still
nobody
answer.
Really controls. And to me, that, I don't think we have answer. It fully figured out, but to me, that seems like the most promising path to get there. And you could imagine some sort of AI agent that's open source software that runs in some environment, and that maybe people donate to pay for the infrastructure.
Or they don't donate to. I mean, the idea is you actually tell the agent, run this thing profitably, and with those profits, reinvest in backing yourself up.
So that seems like a great, like, vibe coding project for you or Matt or Max or me or whatever to do. Someone to do, someone listener. I think that sounds like an amazing experimental project to me. But I'm sure there's, like, at least a dozen things that will be revealed while building it, which make it impractical or infeasible or too risky or whatever.
Today,
you know. So I'm not shitting on the idea. I'm just, to me, that's like, it would be an amazing experiment now, but it's certainly not. Like, it's not a definitive answer.
Well,
like,
and to be clear, I mean, I can tell you, and I need to do a longer write up with this idea.
Like, we can't go to Signal right now and say, here's the answer. Here's your solution.
But,
like,
but I think maybe the thing I'm suggesting is, let's figure it out independent of Signal and prove it. Because I think going to Signal and hassling them to integrate this thing that we don't even have an answer to is kind of backward. Let's make the answer outside of Signal.
And make it easy,
like,
for them.
Like, Venmo works really well, non-integrated with iMessage, but it works really well.
Yeah.
So, like, let's prove that we can make it work really well. And then once everybody's using it and it's so obvious and you're pasting links into Signal, then we can say, hey, Signal, let's make this thing that already works much better. And then I think as a product manager, or Meredith, whoever, then you have, like, a really strong case to be made.
So I have many ideas around this. And I think that it's a very promising idea. I think, frankly, whoever does it is probably going to need to drop it anon, like Satoshi, because it's also, this is the most subversive, crazy idea. It's not even, like, subversive. It's, like, dangerous in a way, because you're starting digital life. There's things we need, right? We need the GPUs that you can pay for in Bitcoin or in Cashew, which don't exist yet.
I mean, it doesn't even need GPUs, just regular CPUs.
Yeah.
Very low-end hardware could run this. Right?
That's true. It's true. So what I think we should do is, after the Type 1 Summit, which is taking all of my attention now that I've got a bunch of other stuff done, I think I've had this idea. I'm going to drop it here on the show.
Yeah.
You may remember this. Okay, actually, both of you guys. Steve, since you're flexing some early 90s stuff.
By the way, Austin points out that Novell was based in Provo, Utah, which is where he is.
So it was a sales company? Everyone knows Utah's got the Mormon salesman. So what I think we should do is, do you remember in the early 90s, 1993, 1994 era, I believe, I was barely conscious then, but there were these artificial life conferences. Kevin Kelly was at them. A lot of the Santa Fe Institute guys were at them, but it was a thing. They had these, like, artificial life. And I highly recommend one of my favorite books of all time is Out of Control, which is Kevin Kelly's 90s book. It's his best one by far. And in my opinion, it still reads modern, even though it's 30 years old. I think what we should do is, a lot of these guys were, like, the true wizards of that day. And they were all at, like, Apple, and, like, many of them probably just live here, like, in this, you know, Santa Cruz Mountains now. We should bring it back and do Artificial Life 3 or Artificial Life 4, whatever vintage it's on, but with a Bitcoin and Cashew kind of, like, focus. And so bring all of these great minds back together, but this time be like, boys, we've got your digital ATP. We've got your life currency now. You want to form digital life? We got the tools. And come away with the goal of hackathon. Maybe we even attach a hackathon with it, get Cali and the best hackers. We want to leave this with artificial life birth.
So, Autonomous Life Summit.
Yes.
Like Type 1 Summit, Autonomous Life Summit.
Yeah.
I mean, I like
ALS.
I like the way you.
That's actually like for the Bitcoin community.
I like the way you've organized Type 1 Summit to not, it doesn't feel like it's a Bitcoin shill fest.
No.
It's not for Bitcoiners, by Bitcoiners. I mean, it's by Bitcoiners, but it's for everybody who cares about this topic, independent of your interest or allegiance to Bitcoin.
Exactly.
You can kind of, you know, figure it out along the way if it turns out to be the right tool. Great. I think Autonomous Life Summit or whatever you want to call it.
Slightly different acronym.
Could kind of benefit from a similar kind of vibe that's not like, hey, we've got the answer for you. It's called Bitcoin and Nostradamus. It's like, hey, Autonomous Life, how do we want to build it?
And here are some tools that might be interesting.
Might be interesting, yeah.
And actually, I love it. This is something I was talking with Alex about yesterday. You know, obviously, we love all the Bitcoin conferences. We've all been to many, 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 especially us, many, 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 many of them. But what I like about the Type 1 Summit a lot, and what I think this could also benefit from, and I think it's part of our mission at PB, which is to expand from, you know, the current members of the cult to the new members, which is going to be the rest of Silicon Valley, is it's in the background, right? It's like, it's there. You know, we're certainly, I mean, we're going to have a ton of Bitcoiners there, but like half the folks that we have coming to the summit are like people at Tesla or people at Google or like, and I don't think they're anti-Bitcoin because if they saw it's hosted at Presidio Bitcoin and they were anti-Bitcoin, they would probably refuse the invitation. But it's all about energy. And oh, by the way, they're going to realize, oh, like all these really smart Bitcoin miners, like we talked about, like why are all the early mining companies now the ones making all the money in AI? Maybe there's something there. And I think similar for artificial life, like I think it's also a big step we can make. You know, I'll never forget. It was very kind of sad to me. It was actually one of the sadder things in the last couple of years of my life was when we went to the Kevin Kelly thing, you know, his library thing. Yeah. That was so cool. Yeah, I love seeing Kevin Kelly is one of my heroes. I love his book so much. And it was just, yeah, it was a little crushing when I mentioned, you know, I work in Nostra Bitcoin. I could just see his face like, oh, crypto. He's like, I don't like all that shit.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you don't understand, man. This is like so in line with, you just, like the crypto people have so tarnished the beautiful things we're trying to work on. And anyways, reclaiming that and getting people like Kevin Kelly just to see the broader picture of, no, this is part of evolution. You're missing the point because of all these like scammer fucks. Anyways.
Yep.
Yeah. It was sad. It was very...
So we got a bunch of things I want to talk about. Well, maybe we'll talk about use cases of Signal and Bitcoin in a future episode.
Okay.
That cool?
Yeah, sure.
Do you have any ideas? Just like high level, any that come to mind?
Well, now if you go a Square terminal and pay in Bitcoin, Signal can become your wallet, right? I mean, most people don't have Bitcoin on their phone. Even people who own Bitcoin don't have Bitcoin on their phone. They don't have like a spending wallet.
Yeah.
But for the 100 million plus people who have Signal, then all of a sudden it's like, okay, now I have a spending wallet.
100 million? I didn't realize it was that large.
I mean, they hit 100 million like 4 years ago. So I don't, they might be 200 million now, more.
Wow. They're on the ETF.
the Signal ETF? I don't know what that is. But but yeah, they could spend at Square. So one thing.
Speaking of.
I was hoping to talk about is the stickers. Yeah. I mean, we talked about Square last week, so we don't have to rediscuss the product announcement of accepting Bitcoin. But I think this week Square revealed the stickers that they're providing for free to merchants. These are the stickers that you see in merchant windows that they accept, you know, Visa or Apple Pay or Cash App or whatever, different payment systems. And now the new stickers, of course, have a Bitcoin logo. And
does it have Bitty or somebody on it? Or?
Well, so that's one of the things we can talk about. I have a little bit of inside baseball because I saw the discussion about what it should look like. Before we get into like style and stuff like that, I think this is actually going to be a really big deal. And because I think it can change the psychology of normal people who don't own Bitcoin, or maybe they do own Bitcoin, but they don't, certainly don't spend it. Like no one's spending Bitcoin, right? So normal people, I think just normal people are like, they just think of Bitcoin as like, you know, it goes up and down a lot. It's gone up more than it's gone down. Early people got rich, digital gold, period. But it's like, it failed. It's not a currency. Not a currency because people don't use it. I've never seen anyone spend it, right? Now people are going to walk into stores, go to merchants, and they'll see the sticker with Visa and MasterCard, and they'll see a Bitcoin B symbol.
That's awesome.
And
it's a slogan. And it's everywhere you want it to
We should have had you involved.
Yeah, Steve. They need to get you in the marketing team here.
Yes. You have a job.
Yeah.
Even if no one is actually even using Bitcoin to spend at Square terminals, just seeing the Bitcoin V symbol, it makes you think. It's a perception. It makes you think, oh, people must be spending Bitcoin. It's it's here. It's arrived. And it can be a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? All of a sudden, it shifts the narrative from like Michael Saylor, like ETF, digital gold, to like, or not necessarily shift. I mean, you can still have that narrative, but also the narrative of like, oh, it has become, it's become a currency now.
It must be.
It's arrived as a currency.
Right.
And at least opens your mind. So that it might, I mean, it still might be 4 years from now where you actually have Bitcoin in your phone and you're spending it, but it's changed your concept.
Shifts the Overton window.
Yeah.
And so, what does it take to get these? You have to go out to all the merchants who have a thing and sort of explain it, or just it comes with a packet that they already typically do updates and installs on?
No, I mean, if you're a Square merchant, you just, there's a website, you click a button and you can get up to 9 of them for free.
And so, you put them like on your store window or on the terminal itself, or?
Yeah, I mean, just there's no innovation there. Just like it's done today with different stickers. I mean, Square's provided stickers in the past. This is just a new set with Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm. Are there plans? So that's cool, but that are obviously very few people will begin by opting in and asking for a sticker. Are there plans for Square to proactively send them to everyone?
Well, I don't know about that, but what I have seen is that like we have a Bitcoin army, right? So there are people, Bitcoiners, tweeting saying like, I want to go hand these stickers. Can I get the stickers so I can hand them to my favorite merchants to convert them? And I think the right answer there is go talk to your merchants and say, hey, I'd like to buy in Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And by the way, right here, just click this button in your UI and you enable it. Oh, like, man. It's dead simple. That coffee shop in Washington, D.C. just promoted themselves as like the first coffee shop to accept Bitcoin through a Square terminal. It is as easy as just like tapping a button and turning it on. So the Bitcoin army can go convince our merchants to that, and then also point them out and just go to this website, click a button, order your stickers, and then post your stickers.
Alternative ideas, perhaps since Novell is based in Provo, Utah and doesn't appear to be doing much these days, perhaps they could turn into a marketing company for Bitcoin. Have you heard the good word of Satoshi? Like, I always feel bad for these merchants. Like, so we should actually check in on our homework from last week, because I mentioned to two different merchants, our normal lunch spot here in the Presidio, and to my favorite tea shop, that both of which have Square terminals, and said, if you opt into accepting Bitcoin, I will pay you in Bitcoin. It'd be super cool. The first lady was like, oh no, not again. Like, I could tell she's been hit with like 15 people already. I was like, oh shit.
The Bitcoin. That's good. That's like, good news, actually.
I know.
You're saying the lunch
lady. Okay. She was like, well, she's
like, oh, Cafe RX.
Yeah. Okay. And she's not but she was like, listen, she's super nice. And she was like, I could tell she was like, oh God, the Bitcoiners. And she was like, listen, she's like, there's only one of me back here. It's complex. I have all this stuff. My life is very complex. I don't want, like, she's not anti it. She just like, is like, I don't want complexity. And I was like, well, what if it was simple? It's like, you just have to shift one toggle and it's done forever. She was like, if it can become that simple, we can talk.
Okay. Well, November 10th, we'll go back and talk to her.
So we should go back and talk to her. Yeah. My tea lady was fascinated, and I'm super excited, actually. A little bit of an alpha drop. You boys ready for some alpha?
Yeah.
At the Type 1 Summit, thanks to the homie Alex over here, we've been working on this. We have one of the only, I think it's like 6 recognized tea masters, as recognized by the Japanese government, who will be preparing a sencha.
Wow.
It's going to be excellent. Wow. It's going to be, this is what I'm saying. This is some high.
Does he accept Bitcoin?
Well, not yet. Not yet.
Okay.
But it's a woman, actually.
Okay. Can we get her set up?
Well, this is the hope. And so there's,
is she based
there's
here?
Two women. Well, there's two. There's one. So my primary tea dealer is in Japantown. She's excellent. She gets super high end, super, super high quality Japanese teas from Japan. And her friend is the one that comes and does all the tea. She's even going to do a little ceremony. I think we'll come in a kimono. It's going to be really cool. It's going to be nice. But the first woman has a shop, and so she already uses Square, so it'd be super easy. And I asked her about that, and she at first, she wasn't anti or positive. She was just kind of, huh. She was like, okay, well, let's chat when it's easy.
Did she already know what it was? And
I mean, she clearly had heard the term Bitcoin, because I was like, you know, and we've been friends. I mean, I've got a standing discount there because I'm a meaningful customer at the tea shop. And so, I mean, I think coming from me, she took it at least somewhat seriously. And I said, I would do this. And she was curious.
Cool.
But I think the key is all these people are just going to be like, it needs to be easy. And so if it really is click a toggle, done.
Yeah, it is easy. Now, you had an experience where the person had never heard of Bitcoin.
Yeah.
How's that possible?
I honestly am shocked by that.
I was kind of surprised, but I mean, this is actually my favorite burrito shop is Avatar's Punjabi Burritos.
Ooh, that's a good name.
Which they're all over. There's a bunch of them around Marin, but there's one that I go to kind of frequently, and it's a cash only place, and they have cash only on the signs, and you know, they're very like kind of like, we don't want to talk about any of that. And if it's not cash, it's, you know, it's trash. So I asked him, I was like, oh, do you guys accept Bitcoin? And he was like, no,
was this
no,
the owner that? Or just like one of the
I think
tellers?
This was like maybe not the owner of the whole
manager
multi thing, but I think this was the manager. I think this guy, the decision maker
for this shop.
Yeah, yeah. And he was like, oh, no, what is that? And I was like, he's like, we don't really accept anything. Oh, and I showed him my phone. He's like, oh, this is like a digital thing. It's like, oh, yeah, we don't really do that. He's like, I can take a card, but I have to call it into the other shop to actually process it. So I don't want to do that. So just like cash. So he was not particularly receptive to anything digital. Like they don't use Square, no Venmo, no Zelle.
I'm bullish on this guy. He's going to do well in the coming solar apocalypse.
But I told him, I was like, you know, a lot of tech people, I bet you have a lot of tech people come through here. A lot of tech people that I know like to pay in Bitcoin. It's kind of like cash, digital cash. And I showed him on my wallet what it looks like on a digital wallet. And he was kind of like, okay. I don't think he really internalized what I was talking about. But I said, well, I bet you like gold, right? And he's like, yeah, yeah, of course. Of course, gold, yeah, of course. I said, well, this is like,
I bet you like
digital
guns,
gold.
Right?
So he just was not familiar at all with the concept of Bitcoin, never heard of it, didn't know the concept of digital gold. But I think he was mostly turned off by the fact that it was a digital experience.
Yes, we should try the sales pitch of saying, hey, how would you like receiving a gold coin for a burrito? Right?
Yeah, yeah. We can try it.
Anyhow, well, thanks for reporting.
And did you do your homework?
Yes, Steve.
I did not do.
Indirectly
to my home. I did not do the prescribed.
You worked on some open source software.
Yeah. I'm dealing stickers. But yes, I need to. I will report back.
Yeah,
I'll report back.
Beautiful. Okay. But by the way, on that topic, so one thing we should talk about. So, I met some interesting people at the Lightspark thing. So we should touch on their announcement as well. But one of the guys I met who I'm going to invite over, I actually didn't realize they were still alive. I didn't realize they were still around, was blockchain.com.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know they're still like operating? And like, I figure all these like early crypto companies have like giant treasuries because, you know, they're various, endeavors in crypto. But it sounds like they're coming back to Bitcoin. So that was cool. And he was a nice guy. We could chat. But he was telling me, I didn't realize, he was making the point that a lot of folks like this Punjabi guy or whatever that you were talking about, that, apparently in Costco, I knew you could buy gold, but apparently they're selling out, which is interesting. Yeah. But apparently you can buy like a lot of gold. Like he was like, oh yeah, like 10 to like $100,000 worth of gold. I don't know if that's true, but that sounds kind of insane to me.
At Costco?
Yeah.
Oh, why is that? I mean,
well, I don't know. That's like a lot of money to spend at a Costco.
I think there are daily limits. But
$100,000 of gold like fits in a small portion of your palm of your hand.
Is that true? I'm the opposite of this guy. I have no idea what the physical world.
We should teach you about gold. Gold is this new money.
I'm not anti-gold. I don't know what to do with it.
You can have 10 1-ounce coins, and that would be $43,000.
For real?
And
how much is a bar? Like a big ass bar. No,
we're talking about, think of the size of a quarter that's about 2 inches tall.
Yeah.
A tube.
Yeah.
Can hold 10 ounces, 10 coins. And that's $43,000. So, I mean, if I held my palm out like this, I could have like $500,000.
Like an average home in the US, I think is 400K. So you could hold all of the value of an average home in the US. In the palm of your hand.
I'm getting longer gold. Wow.
Yeah.
Didn't know that. Well, anyway,
gold is up.
I've heard it. We should touch on that point. But Because okay, so
it's up a lot.
Well, let's talk about gold, but one last thing I just want to mention from this guy, which I thought was interesting. He made the point to me that he was like, particularly for some of this like older generation that likes gold and probably a lot of immigrants, people from India, he was like, you need to be able to go into Costco and like it would be an interesting product and buy a physical Bitcoin. And I remember they had these back in the old days, the cashless coins. Yeah. And then there was a ballet crypto, these like thick, thick metal cards that had like stickers. And I don't know how they did implemented all the stuff to make sure no one jacked your coins. But I thought that was an interesting point. I imagine, you know, there is like probably a meaningful market of all these people. And I've seen like in Australia and all these places, they're lining up like down the block to buy gold as the global economy collapses. And, you know, if Costco is selling out nonstop, I do think it'd be interesting for like this guy at your burrito place. Maybe he won't take your, you know, newfangled internet thing. But if you went to him with a giant heavy coin, you're like, this is Bitcoin. I don't know. I think it's interesting.
Yeah.
Meaning to help sell him on the idea.
Yeah.
Like actually pay him with that.
Well, maybe you could do both. I don't know. But if he does, that'd be a lot of
burrito. He doesn't understand how to value it.
I mean, I think open dimes are super cool.
Yeah. Yeah, but open dime is cool, but that's like.
But you have the denomination issue.
I think there's a couple ways to go. Open dime is cool, but that's a kind of very cypherpunk, whatever. That feels like you're like, you know, whatever, like.
Sure. Whatever. But, I mean, imagine a cooler coin, but it's still the same problem.
Exactly.
Like it has so much value on it. It's not the value what I want to pay for the burrito. Then how do you get your change?
I think there's a tree here, and I think both are interesting. Maybe this actually could be an opportunity for a startup or Square or whatever is like to provide the technology to do this. But I mean, one thing you could do for the actual just like commerce is like paper bills. Now this is something that actually Danny was really interested in doing for a while. And some people were doing this, if I recall, like 7 years ago or something, where you get like a piece, like a dollar bill. And there's like some kind of like either scratch off code or some way to verify there's still Bitcoin on there, but it's like very, very tiny denominations. When I say tiny, like
20, isn't like the SAT card kind of does this?
Yeah, and also like an eCash project created cool looking paper bills that could have eCash tokens embedded in them.
Yeah.
Whether it's private keys or eCash tokens, all of those have the trust element. But you know, I don't think it's a showstopper. I do think it's, for the reasons you're saying, it's pretty compelling, especially to someone new to have something they can touch and feel. I think the important thing is like if it's enough value, that there's that people realize they need to get it off of that.
Well, right? or do they? I mean, so play devil's advocate,
because like let's say it's a Cassius coin and it's worth like $50,000 or $100,000 or something. It's super risky having that bearer token with no backup. Like for example, I had an open dime and I gave some I gave that to some folks I know, and this was like in 2017, 2018. I would pay them back from like groceries and stuff like that.
Very expensive groceries.
Well, and it turned all of a sudden, I mean, literally I was just paying back from splitting bills and stuff, and then now it's worth like $50,000 or something. Mm-hmm. So then I started like getting nervous about it sitting on this open dime, and like if that somehow gets lost or destroyed, the money's gone.
Right.
So got them moved over to a BitKey. So you're not taking advantage of an enormous advantage of Bitcoin over gold, which is you can duplicate and back up.
I agree. And there should be a path off of that. And that's why maybe it's interesting for Square, because you have BitKey and maybe there's like a way to be the technology provider that allows you to give you that path when you're ready. But you also have to acknowledge that if people are lining up at Costco and are apparently having $500,000 in their palms and they're comfortable with that, there is a market for that.
But still, there's a huge difference. Like with gold, I mean, it can survive fire and like,
Could this though, right? Like, I guess my point is like, you know, those like ballet crypto cards or whatever.
A little digital device?
Well, I think we're talking about two different things. I'm talking you have like a heavy, like if you're doing, let's say you have $50,000 on here, it shouldn't be on a damn open dime, right? We're talking on like $100 metal card, like something thick, heavy, that you put into a safe.
It'll melt. Like the survivability of gold is better than any kind of private key.
Okay, here's a crazy idea. Put it on, I don't know, gold or platinum, and then now you got double out bling, right? All I'm saying is, like, there are a lot of people who understand this idea of, I have this thing, I put it in a vault. If I lose this thing, I lose it. And they're okay with that risk profile. And it's great if then over time, I now realize it's digital, I can kind of off-ramp. But again, so I think this is actually a good transition point. You know, I had an LP emailing me, and it's kind of funny. He's like, hey, man, like, just curious, like, why is gold mooning while Bitcoin is not? It's like, well, first of all, again, what time frame are we talking about? Like 2 years ago, Bitcoin was like under 30K, right? So, you know, what are we talking about? Mooning. But it, to your point, Steve, you can't argue that like gold is just crushing it right now. And so one debate I've had with various people in chat.
It's up to like $30 trillion.
Is it really?
Market cap.
The market cap of gold?
It was $10 trillion just a bit ago.
Yeah. Now it's 30.
Oh. Oof. All right.
I mean, it's gone.
Is that in
like
the last year or so?
Well, it's gone from 1600 to, I mean, it floated around 1700 forever, and now it's 4300.
No mummies.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just in the last 2 months, it's gone from like 3000 to 4300.
Is there some sort of like obvious explanation for that? Is it like repatriation or some geopolitical concerns and stuff like that? Or
probably central banks buying.
So well,
China, Russia.
So this is the question. This is what I'm getting hit with and debating with people in various chats and having LPs asking me is like, you know, they're like, you know, okay, well, basically, why is it gold and not Bitcoin yet? And my simple answer, I mean, short answer, no one knows, right? Like, you can just guess. My guess is old people still run the world. And the old people are still comfortable with gold because they know it, they get the narrative. So, you know, I heard someone else saying this and I kind of agree with him that like, this is probably the last cycle where gold is what moons while there's an economic crisis. And maybe the next one is Bitcoin.
Also central banks. I mean,
for that reason, because who runs central banks?
Well, and also central banks have a process for how to custody gold and they don't have a process for how to custody Bitcoin. They can't just go on an exchange, buy some, you know, chuck it in the...
Who's doing that, by the way? That seems like an incredible opportunity to be like the service provider for central banks.
I don't really want to promote the person who's doing it.
That's a startup?
Yeah.
We should chat more about it. I like that startup.
All right. Maybe we'll fund an alternative one.
Yeah. The open source version.
So you're just saying you don't want central banks owning Bitcoin or?
I didn't.
Is that, what are you getting at there? You know a person who's doing
I don't want to promote not crazy people.
Okay.
Their startup, so.
Oh, so there's spicy. A specific startup that we don't want to.
Oh, I think it may
the thing which shall not be spoken.
Okay. We should chat more about all this, but oh, okay. So we're getting some, a bunch of actual like traction in the thing. Haha, Coinbase Max. Okay, so they're going to be custodying the central banks. Yeah, well, then we need some alternatives. I wonder if River could do this. Seems like a big opportunity. And then we should give a shout out.
But I think, I mean, yes, River should do it. But like if I'm China, I'm not going to store my Bitcoin with an American company.
Cool.
Right?
Well, then that means there's lots of opportunity.
There needs to be better self-custody solutions and processes for a government or large, you know, sovereign.
Like who's custodying for El Salvador, probably Coinbase? Who's custodying for Bhutan? Like
BitGo did at one point.
Who's doing it for Bhutan?
I don't know, but it's probably American
probably
companies.
China doesn't want to just adopt whatever El Salvador is doing. Right?
So that's a lot of them are probably using American companies, countries. But that's at best a temporary band-aid. It's very dumb. It's literally repeating gold.
Yeah.
So again, not taking advantage of of properties
totally.
Of Bitcoin.
Maybe some of these companies could like provide the consulting and like and solutions. Like, this is a terrible analogy, but like Palantir for self-custody. Like they're like, it's essentially, I know it's a terrible idea, but it's, you know, it's effectively a consulting company to help these guys do that. Because these guys, again, I come back to these guys are old.
Yeah.
Anyways, but I also want to give a shout out to the homie Barris Wheel. Who is a fun guy. Got to meet him recently. What's up, Barris? And he says, Steven Pinker calls this common knowledge in his new book, when people know there's no BTCs accepted via merchants, it should help scale the PR significantly.
Really. He replied to my tweet with that too, and I skimmed through the interview with Steven Pinker. It was pretty interesting.
Yeah, nice.
Where was the interview? This was like...
It was at, I forget. It was an event here in Silicon Valley, down in Santa Clara.
Was there, did he go on Tyler Cowen recently? I feel like I heard some clips of that.
But I mean, he recently wrote a book about like common, what is common knowledge?
Oh, yeah. It was at the Commonwealth.
How does something become common knowledge? Mm-hmm. What is the definition of common knowledge and how does it get to that point?
Right.
And like, obviously money is like an interesting thing to study regarding that.
Right.
And so it's related to the stickers thing.
Yeah. Another theory on the gold stuff that I heard floated, I don't know if you guys have any opinion on this, but I think I heard that there may be, I think U.S. Treasury holds a lot of gold, but it's priced at like $43 an ounce or something.
So we hear.
Is that right? But it's like purposely just priced
low
from like the 70s and they never repriced it. And I've heard this theory that they're going to reprice it and sell it in order to
buy Bitcoin
for the strategic reserve in a budget neutral way.
Meaning on the US accounting books,
yes.
They've valued it at $40 or whatever.
Yeah, something like that. And so if you revalue it at whatever it is,
like whatever the price was,
$4,300 or whatever,
or something like that.
Yeah. So if you do that, then you actually can sell it to whoever wants to buy it, China or whatever, you know, where, and then you can use that to fund a strategic reserve.
Is that why the price of Bitcoin has gone from 125 to 105?
I think that was part of the theory, is that it might be trying to tank the market while doing this move to buy.
That seems very in line with Trump thinking. And I mean, if so, and he pulls it off, wow, that'd be
part of the deal.
That'd be a giga brain move. I'm skeptical, but maybe.
One thing before I forget, want to give a shout out to our builder event, which is next Thursday.
Week. Yeah.
So it's here at Presidio Bitcoin, starts at 6:30 PM. I think it starts at 6 PM networking, and then the event starts at 6:30 PM. So hope to see as many people as possible come out. We've been having, I think, around 25-30 people show up. We encourage as many people want to attend as possible. You don't need to be a Bitcoiner. You just need to care about innovation and building.
Just be curious.
Vibe coding.
Yeah.
And talk about products and business. That's the thrust. And of course, there's like a Bitcoin theme to it, but it's really about innovation and building. So hope to see more people out coming out.
I love it. And I did just want to also mention, I went to the Lightspark Day thing and they had their announcement grid, which I think is pretty interesting. Did you guys look at this?
I cleaned on the website, but I didn't study. So tell us more about it.
So I think this is actually pretty practical. So like what, you know, there's obviously all the Spark stuff. And by the way, there's some really interesting, I came away on the Spark side with a clear, I think their CTO, everyone on the team has the message, like confidential transactions need to come. So I think that was like a clear message that came away from that. Like, Spark being completely open is certainly not like in the long-term roadmap. So that was comforting and good for me to hear.
Completely open, meaning publishing the transactions?
Yeah, there was that whole sort of controversy where I forgot who it was, but someone published that you could see like every transaction ever. And like, right. It's interesting because like, you know, there was like one or two people on the team that was kind of like, well, that's how Bitcoin works. And like, so isn't transparency better? And it's like, but I think the majority of the team, including their CTO, understands like, now we need confidential transactions here. That's a non-starter. So that was very comforting.
To be clear, I think it's CTs for tokens, not for Bitcoin payments.
I thought it was for Bitcoin payments too.
No, just for their tokens.
Yeah, well, then
they do have some improvements, pragmatic improvements for privacy, which goes a pretty long ways addressing my concerns that I had stated.
Cool. Well, that's good to hear. So, I mean, at a high level, it's clear that people that are designing things there understand having everything open is not the ideal state of the world, and that's not what they tend to stick on. So that's good. And like, yeah, I think, you know, just remember everything is always a work in progress. And like, yeah. So anyway, so I'm excited to see them continue to move in a more private direction. It seems like that's going to happen. But what I thought was actually really cool and practical is the grid thing. And I think the way I think about grid, and I'm certainly don't claim to be an expert on it, but is, you know, really using Bitcoin as the neutral settlement layer between existing real-time payment networks. And so one of the cool things, you know, is you forget here in the United States, like, you know, sadly, a lot of our technology is still pretty hood. I mean, we do have stuff like Cash App and, you know, PayPal and stuff, which is all right. But we forget in, you know, countries like Brazil and India with UPI and Mexico with Spay, I think SEPA is pretty good in Europe. I don't know. But like, there are a lot of really good functioning real-time payment networks that just work. And I guess that's what FedNow is trying to be in the United States. And so I think a lot of the focus and thrust for them is how do we use Bitcoin and Lightning or Spark, like whatever's cheaper and better to use, to be able to connect up institutions within these countries that have the real-time networks, offer up the commands to those real-time payment networks as an API. So the developers can easily say, hey, I built an app where I don't even know where Bitcoin is, but what I do know is I sent money from Brazil and received money in India, and it taps into all three real-time payment networks, Spay, or I forget the Brazil, Pix, Bitcoin, and UPI. And also interesting, I didn't realize one of their chief product dudes helped design UPI. That was kind of interesting to hear. What I like about that is, and I think sometimes there's a bit of a divide between sort of the Bitcoin community and what they perceive a company like Lightspark to do. what I think is really cool is there's, you know, certainly the like Bitcoiner cypherpunk ethos, if we just want to exit the system, that's great. And like, I'm glad that exists for everyone that wants it. I think it's absolutely critical that anything, you know, a company ever develops be backwards compatible, things like Lightning, and always gives the option for exit for those that want it. That's a, you know, clear, if you don't have that, it's a non-starter. Having said that, what I think that Lightspark is coming out as very practical is I think sometimes we lose in the Bitcoin community is like most people just don't give a fuck. And like, we would love them to give a fuck. We really want them to care. And like, we really hope we all get there, but like, we also live in reality. And what's really cool that I think they're focused on is a separate problem, which is just how do you build the glue to connect all of the existing payments, not to help people check out of the system, but rather to expand the amount of commerce that happens in the traditional KYC world. And that's also extremely useful. So I'm excited to see what people build. I mean, I think, you know, just, my hunch is there's going to be a lot of like long tail, just like business payment opportunity for stuff like what happens when you have a lot more commerce between Nigeria and Brazil or Nigeria and India. So I like it.
What, this is a one-day event?
One-day event.
And you went to it. I'm curious, what are your impressions? I think there are quite a few products or integrations announced that were also DeFi and tokens in that world. What's your takeaway on like the split between stablecoin momentum versus tokens and DeFi versus Bitcoin payments on Spark?
I mean, of the talks and chats that I participated in, very little on the token front, to be honest. Like, I'm sure that's there. I think that's mostly like what Ethan is focusing on, like, and maybe they'll, you know, whatever, continue more integrations. I would say dominant at the event was payments. Dominant. And I think what's interesting, Christian, who's the chief strategy officer there, he actually gave a really nice talk on like the sort of history of open networks. And his first example was the Silk Road, which I thought was interesting for many reasons. But it was really nice to hear. I mean, like, I will say it was by far my favorite part or presentation there. And it was good to see, like, he was not LARPing. Like, he really has done his homework. He really believes in open networks. And that was great to see. I think there was also, to be frank, frustration on their team, or not, maybe not frustration, but just like exasperation. Like, I think a lot of us feel too, where it's like, you know, the corp chain thing, you know, cause it's like these guys all spun out of Facebook and they tried to do corp chain in 2019. And, you know, the reality is if they had tried to do that today in 2025, I lose track of that sometimes, then, it probably would have worked, to be frank. But to your point, you've always made, Steve, administrations change, right? So I think there's some frustration on their part, which I totally understand. I feel the same way, where it's like, I mean, Stripe and all these like scammy companies are going to get away with stuff for a while. But I think it was encouraging for me to see from David all the way through the rest of the team, the commitment to like, in the long run, open networks are going to win. We may have to go through the desert for 3 more years or however long it is, but like eventually open networks have to win because Stripe is never going to integrate with Adyen.
And is Grid, that you were talking about, Grid is like a product that they announced?
Or like
that,
kind of a developer tooling?
Because my understanding is that Lightspark has kind of the traditional Lightspark business, which is kind of, I think of it as integrations with banks. Mm-hmm. And then there's Spark, which is kind of like the indie bottoms-up developer mm-hmm. like approach, or the hope to sort of instigate that ecosystem. Is Grid part of the
more
first?
Of the former?
Is it from like Lightspark or is it from a third party?
No, it's company? From Lightspark.
Yeah, okay.
And so the key, my takeaway is those bank integrations are very valuable because, like, again, if you want to access PIX and UPI, that's really cool that now you can have normie real-time commerce between Brazil and India. No one even knows what Bitcoin is, or like it just fades to the background, right? Which is always, that was kind of the mission of companies like Strike and a lot of other companies in mm-hmm. the early days, right? What I think is unique about what they're focusing on with Grid now is offering those tools up, not as like a consumer product, but as API, like really simple commands for like send, receive money. Mm-hmm. So a developer could now go in there and build, I don't know what kind of app, but like some cool app that takes advantage of 3 real-time payment networks, 2 of which are proprietary, 1 of which is Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. So I came away like more bullish and encouraged on the whole direction of the company, but also sharing in some of that exasperation of like, are we going to have to go through one more corp chain shitcoin fest before we get to the promised land?
But isn't it going to be like, like stables could run on that. And that feels like the kind of thing that you could actually build momentum.
Totally.
On,
and I think that's David's whole point too, which I totally agree with, is he's like, this other corp chain stuff, it's not going to work because you're not going to be able to interconnect all the corp chains. Now, how long does it take everyone to realize that? How much greed do the companies doing this have to go through first before they accept that reality? But in the meantime, and I think he's a very reasonable guy in all this, where he's like, look, we have to deliver a better real-time payment experience, or we don't deserve to win.
But let's talk about that. How do they practically do that? So let's say there's some dollar on Spark, and then you want to pay someone who's has a wallet that has Tether on Tron or USDC on Base or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
How does Spark? Like, what's the solution to that? I mean, we talked about the solution before, so I sort of know the answer, but what's the solution that compared to if Spark didn't exist?
So,
how does the open network help this problem?
So, one thing, I don't actually know the answer to that because I don't think that was the focus. I think the focus, frankly, so I think that's almost like a separate set of product lines, like to your point, more bottom up. I think the focus was much more on like what I saw the original Strike model as, which like no stablecoins. It's just like we're bridging between payment networks and Bitcoin and Lightning because we can have each institution running a Lightning node to run it for them. We can do the real-time settlement. I think the difference is now they're plugging into the real-time proprietary networks within these countries and offering that as developers API. Yeah.
So we don't even need stablecoins.
Exactly. You don't even need stablecoin. Yeah. You're just bridging.
That I understand. And yeah. I do think it's slick. I thought it was slick. I mean, I used
when Strike said that, yeah.
I used it, literally used it in Ghana at a restaurant. I forget if I mentioned that on the show before, but I think I've told you guys. Paid a bill and I used the Strike app. So it's like dollars from a US bank in my Strike app. And I just punched in the mobile phone number of this restaurant in Ghana and they ended up receiving mobile money
exactly
through that, right? And so
it's that.
I didn't have to understand that system other than typing in a phone number and they received what they're normally expect. And it, in between was the Lightning Network and Bitcoin.
Yeah. So that's my understanding what it is, with the added advantage of more connectivity with like more like regulated financial institutions plugging into this, offering more off-ramps on and off-ramps, and offering it up more as a developer-focused API versus a consumer app. Yeah. So honestly, I'm more bullish on that than I am than a lot of the stablecoin. I just like, I like this like, and again, it's almost like, I almost view there's like two different camps, and I would encourage the Bitcoiners just to remember, it's like, if you really want to go cypherpunk and unplug, that's its own thing and it's awesome and it's beautiful and I really hope we get the whole world there. But then there's this other thing of just using Bitcoin as the internet to bridge existing commerce intranets and build one giant financial open network. And again, as long as it's backwards compatible with Bitcoin and Lightning, then great. You know, when people, kind of like with the gold coin, like once they realize, oh, now there's all this other superpowers I get with my coin, there should always be a route off. And, hopefully that's
AOL did a lot for the growth of the internet.
Exactly.
One thing I haven't studied. So I've studied Spark a lot from the Bitcoin payment side, know it well, but not the tokens.
I don't know as much about the tokens, okay. To be honest.
Well, then we'll do some homework. And I'd like to understand the relationship between tokens being issued on Spark and its relationship back to the Bitcoin network.
That's a great question. To be honest, I'm way less. I like this like kind of like old school, just like bridge the payment networks way more than I like all the token crap.
Yeah. I think the token stuff is harder to create the same incentives when you run an L1 that is your own free money. Because I think a lot of what works for tokens to instigate these ecosystems of token creators is to give L1 bonuses to them for doing it on your chain.
Well, one
of
the
kinds of things won't be possible.
One of the things I'll say that was sort of an impression of mine, and this did not come from the Lightspark team so much, more just like what I'm gathering from chatting with people, is I think that, they're making a big bet on, in the long run, if you go sort of developer top first with consumer applications, that's how you become a giant company, right? Like companies like Facebook and Google are sort of consumer facing. But that's like a huge bet. It's extremely tricky. Very few companies ever thread that needle. It's a bold vision. Whereas honestly, in the short run, where I think there's probably a lot more opportunity, and I'm shocked we haven't seen more of this, not just from them, but from all the companies I work with, is just business to business payments. Like to me, this just seems like there's a huge opportunity of like, okay, now that we have Lightning working in I'll you know, never forget one example between one of my companies in Brazil and in Nigeria. You know, once they, I mean, it was a very small example, and this should probably be done with like real enterprise sales teams and like real, you know, it's not like these are like new concepts of like how to do B2B payments, but like apparently there was like a huge market that they helped open up, or a relatively new market for like buying Nigerian wigs to ship to Brazil or something, which was just like, what?
Okay.
But this is my, but my point is like, for them, it makes a lot of sense. Cause it's like, it's not some like, you're not trying to like focus on remittances, which are often really small. It's just like, there's like, okay, these guys ship products. If you offer them a new customer, it's like, it's a no brainer.
Should we do a few rapid fires?
If it's, well, let me start. Do you want a Nigerian wig?
We're talking about actual wig.
I don't know. Is that what it, I mean,
like a hair, like,
yeah, yeah.
I maybe. Are you trying to suggest that I need He's a little like, extra no, hair, Max?
I'm gonna dress up as Max for Halloween.
Let's do quick rapid fire. So, okay. Like, let's. Rumors are Saylor's going on Joe Rogan, or just went on Joe Rogan.
Ooh.
At least that's what I wrote on Twitter.
I think somebody saw like his plane in Austin or something.
So, but regardless of whether that's true or not, then some people replied saying like, "Oh, you know, he's not the best spokesperson to go for Bitcoin to go on Joe Rogan." I'm sure there's others who would say he's the best spokesperson. So I'm curious, what are your thoughts on who would be the best spokesperson for Bitcoin to go on Joe Rogan?
Andreas Antonopoulos.
Well, he's already done it.
He's already
multiple times. Yeah, I was about to say the same thing. Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
By the way, Andreas still is underrated. Everyone should watch. Like, everyone should have their friends. I found myself recently telling new kids working at this event, if you haven't watched all of Andreas's talks, like, start there.
I like my favorite. The one you got to start with is him like talking in front of an empty room.
But who else? So I saw people suggest Jack Mallers, Jack Dorsey. The thing, you know, I mean, I don't really know what the right answer is, because like at the launch event we had at Presidio Bitcoin, we had Michael Saylor here, Jack Dorsey here, and Greg Maxwell here. Three very important figures in the history of Bitcoin and Bitcoin today. Three very different people. And obviously the profile of Saylor and Jack are much greater than Greg Maxwell. But Greg Maxwell arguably is, you know, had a similar impact on the history of Bitcoin. But you know, they're all three very different. They care about different things. They know about different things with Bitcoin. They speak about Bitcoin very differently.
Right.
But I see value in all three of their views. And then, you know, and then I think each would criticize each other's views maybe a little bit. So I don't know who the right... It's hard to have...
I don't think there's one.
There's not one person, right? I mean, there's no leader of Bitcoin, and there's really no one who can... I think adequately cover all the bases of Bitcoin.
Okay, so I think this is really interesting. I think we should play this game. So I think Saylor is a great one for sure from one perspective. And I think I'm glad he went on there. It's awesome. I think Jack Dorsey is a great one for sure from another perspective. And I think Jack's been on there multiple times. So like, whatever. And Andreas. But like putting like the big, like obvious ones aside, if you each had to come up with one, maybe a little bit less expected, one or two, whatever, who would you pick to go on Rogan? Besides Jack and Mike.
Get Steve on there.
Oh, good answer. A little buttering up, I see.
I actually think, I think Greg Maxwell would be really interesting. I mean, he's extremely intelligent. He speaks, or he certainly writes very well, and I believe he would speak just as well as his writing. And it would just be such a good contrast to Saylor.
Yeah.
So I'd love to see both, right? And then have the audience see 3 hours of Saylor and 3 hours of Greg Maxwell on Bitcoin. And if you soak in both of those, I think that would be like very complementary between the two.
My understanding, though, I think Greg Maxwell would be a great candidate. My understanding is Rogan is mostly not interested in money or like talking about money. He doesn't want to do a show about money. So it's almost like you want to come with a little bit less of an agenda of like, hey, we're going to go talk about Bitcoin, and it's more like, here's an interesting person. I think Greg, I don't know if you've been to his website lately or followed his stuff, but he does lots of cool like
weird
astro stuff, like space exploration from, you know, the telescopes and stuff. I almost wonder if there's just like, here's kind of a cool, crazy hacker, you know, science oriented guy. And he's a little bit more, you know, money comes up and Bitcoin comes up, but it's not about that. Whereas I feel like you can't have Saylor without it being just about, you know, store value, you know.
Well, and Greg also, if my memory serves me, was like a major contributor to Wikipedia, which that would all probably also interest you. Okay, so I've got two answers that come to mind immediately. One answer, kind of, I would say in a similar vein, is Ben Ark. And the reason I say Ben Ark is I think Joe likes people that are like extremely intelligent and a little bit out there. And Ben fits both of those categories. And Ben is nice because he has a strong left libertarian view, which is extremely unheard of. Even though Joe may not agree with all of this stuff, I think he would be fascinated by Ben's incredibly erudite discussions of the history of anarchism, left libertarianism. Like, I don't even know if Joe knows those things exist, but he would be interested in them. And the fact that Ben helped with Fiat Joff create Nostr, which I actually think in a lot of ways, Nostr is more interesting to Joe than Bitcoin is. And so I think Ben would be really, is kind of one of the co-founders of Nostr, but can also speak on the Bitcoin stuff, calls himself BTC socialist. Right. I think he would like that kind of thing. The other one I would throw out, this is, I'm not sure who exactly, I'm going to throw one person out as a placeholder, but is my homie, Andrew Myers from Satoshi Energy. Andrew, first of all, is just also a wild man, which I love. He could talk to Joe about interdimensional travel and all that stuff, which I know Joe loves. And I think you need someone like that. But also he has the Bitcoin. He's the one that really got me energy pill, that Bitcoin is just energy money. And I think being in Texas, talking about energy, I think that would be really interesting.
I think, more like that breadth of energy focus, and Bitcoin is just like part of it. That kind of, that resonates with me.
I think Lynn Alden would be.
Oh, yeah. Lynn, that's
like, everyone would be confident she'd kill it.
Everyone likes Lynn.
And she also can cover a lot of aspects of, I mean, she can certainly put her Saylor hat on and speak to that narrative very, very well. But
she can also put her on her Saylor hat.
She can
sail the high seas of Bitcoin and Nostr.
I mean, she can speak to Nostr and payments and cypherpunk, and she can cover a lot of angles. So shout out to Lynn.
DK, you got to give us another one.
I gave you
one. Oh, man.
Okay, my other one's Steve Max. Get him up there. Nice.
I said rapid fire. So like, we saw Elon tweet about Bitcoin, I think, in the first time in like years.
Yeah.
So
I don't know if I'm even doing it right. It's something like that. It's overhanded. Yeah.
Shisha.
So what does that mean?
And he's tweeting about energy too.
Yeah.
I think it's big. I mean, I don't remember the exact tweet, but basically Elon saying like Bitcoin can't be printed. It's based on energy, which is another reason. I know after this, we need a chat and to make sure Elon Fusk joins us for the Type 1 Summit. But I think
if, in case Elon is listening, we invite you to the Type 1 Energy Summit. We'd love to have you.
We'd love to have you. And the whole plan of the summit is, how do we go from this sorry state of civilization to harnessing all of the sun's energy touching our planet and then get to Type 2 next? So we'll, you know, maybe I'll put that one too. But I think one thing that I've noticed for sure is anyone who's extremely intelligent, who understands physics at all, this is based in energy always works. And I think it's no coincidence that's the thing that Elon sticks with. So I think the other positive thing is, I haven't seen him quote tweet about Doge in a while, maybe after the not so successful Doge run, which is a good thing. And I mean, if Elon embraces Bitcoin, if we get lightning payments or whatever one day in X, that would be a game changer.
Yeah.
I'm a fan.
And we're kind of running up on time.
I don't even see the time. I've been like kind of just.
I've got it here. It's 1:30.
Living plus in the eternal now.
You can look at his watch too. That's
there. You go.
Oh wow!
Convenient way to see the time.
Good hack.
So we probably don't have enough time to like get into the how to fund open source Bitcoin development topic, but at least it came up again. Tether announced donating $250,000 to OpenSats, And then Jack Dorsey replied saying, like, you know, only $250K, and he's funded.
It's like tens and 17 tens, minutes of operation.
Tens of millions of dollars. So, you know, on one hand, like, thank you to anyone donating to Bitcoin. On the other hand, you know, compared to Tether's profits, revenue, treasury, whatever metric you want to use, it would be kind of like us donating like
a dollar,
a dime or a dollar or something. Yeah. So, but it raises the question of like, you know, expectations and obligations. Like, yeah, what should Tether's obligation be? What should other companies in Bitcoin space, what's their obligation? Are they obligated to fund it? Is it in their strategic interest? Either way, how much, what should be the expectation? Like, if it's in their strategic interest, how do you go about thinking about what percentage of our revenue, profits, or any other business metric you want to pick should go towards open source funding?
I mean, I think to be fair, I mean, look, I think the whole ethos of Bitcoin is sort of voluntarism. Like, no one should or have to do anything. Like, I don't think that's a good message to ever send. On the other hand, you know, I think from Tether's perspective, it's kind of like, guys, your profit numbers are public. And so in some ways, optically, which, and look, I mean, it's great. Anyone that donates, like, that's awesome. No one has to do that, and that's awesome. But it's kind of like, it would have almost been better to donate nothing. And now it's just kind of like, people are laughing because it's like, dude. And it's like, I mean, the way I think about it is, it's awesome that a company like Bitwise committed to giving 10% of their profits to Bitcoin open source. If Tether did what Bitwise did, bro, I mean, they would make Jack look small.
Yeah.
Right. But they don't need the marketing value.
They don't need the marketing value. But it's like, I mean, my understanding is a lot of these guys at the top, it's just interesting because it's like, and look, I mean, I haven't donated to it, so I'm not gonna whatever, let he who is without whatever cast the first stone. They're probably doing a lot of other stuff, which is awesome. And like, in fact, I know they are, which is great. So I mean, I know Tether has generally been a pretty supportive member of the community. But on the other hand, you know, I mean, if the people at the top of these organizations, it's just kind of crazy because it does seem like everyone's like, oh, it's like, oh yeah, the Bitcoiners, we all want to like support this stuff. And it does seem like a lot of Bitcoiners are pretty tight. There are exceptions. And Jack is certainly one. The guys that funded our office, like, there are people who've really put their money where their mouth is, and it's awesome to see.
But it's a small percentage.
But it's a small percentage. And you kind of get
those
this,
who are generous are extremely generous, but it's small.
But it's super small. And so, and yeah, maybe that's incumbent on all of us. Like, maybe we should all be giving more, and probably we should.
Also, I mean, we're talking about Tether because they announced it and they got poked at a little bit, but there's so many other companies that have donated nothing. So,
agreed.
You know, so I can argue it either way with Tether. Like, number one, thank you. And hopefully it's the start beginning of a lot more.
Yeah.
And I did hear from a source that that's the amount OpenSat suggested. So hopefully it is just, it's a start, and maybe they can fund multiple funding organizations.
I don't know what all they donate elsewhere. So I think that's important.
Yeah. I'd love to see Tether start like their version of Spiral, right?
Amazing.
Start their own organization within Tether, hire someone to lead it, and then give them a budget. I don't think Bad Max wants to do that. He's pointing at you.
You're pointing at me.
I'm
in my garden.
You know, and then like give them, you know, basically like Spiral, but their own version of Spiral.
Yeah,
when I created Spiral, like it was like I looked at Chaincode and Brink and MIT DCI and all these different orgs and just sort of copied aspects of each, but then also added my own sort of flavor. And like, that's what I'd encourage anyone else to do as well. So I think that would be really interesting. But yeah, hopefully it's just the start of much, much bigger stuff in the future. And to all the other large companies that are, you know, have a lot of profits, like, I think they could do more as well.
Is there some sort of curated list where we can see all of the orgs, like maybe in OpenSats and a Chaincode and Brink, where you can see what they are, and maybe like, do they even have public addresses where you could make donations if you wanted? Like, if you wanted to donate a dollar, you mentioned that. Do you have to talk to somebody, or can you just do it?
No, I know, like Brink and HRF, you can just do it. I'm sure all of them you can, but on their websites and like, you know, so it's a short list, so I can easily name them. You know, Brink, Vindium, HRF, OpenSats, Localhost as well. I actually don't know. You know, Localhost started a year ago, funded by initially by Wences and Mark, the same two that
same
funded
donors here,
City of Bitcoin. But I believe their model, you know, they are seeking funding from others as well. I don't know the status of that. I don't know if you go to the Localhost website, can you pay a Bitcoin address? I think that's their vision, and maybe it might be their reality now.
And to be fair, again, I think we shouldn't pick on Tether too much, because like, they have done a lot in other things, and like, there's probably a lot of other organizations, which I'm guessing is Tether money, that they're not calling Tether money. And so like, you know, you should encourage them to continue building. But I think
don't shame people for small amounts. Encourage it.
Yeah, encourage like, hey guys, that's great. We appreciate it. And like, you're probably doing a lot more, and we hope you continue to do a lot more. And like, hey, by the way, Bitwise does 10%. That would be something really crazy to shoot for, right? But I also think, to be fair to a lot of these donors and individuals too, because I think about that sometimes, and it's like, you know, you always say, oh, one day if I get super rich, I'll like give back. And then very few people ever do. For whatever reason, there are certain people like Jack who seem to retain their values. Most people, as they get rich, don't seem to retain their values. Now, one thing though, is that maybe they're busy people and they don't have a lot of opportunity. They don't know what's a good nonprofit. They don't know what's useful. And I think in the case of like Mark and Wince's, like they were extremely generous, but someone had to like come to them and be like, hey, here's a great idea. And they're like, yeah, this is a great idea. And so I think, if anything, you mentioned like a bunch of these organizations. Bantium was Lucas from Lightning Labs. He just had a vision. He went out there and did it. And he talked to people like John Pfeffer and others. And like there were people who were very generous. But like the real scarce resource is never money. The real scarce resource is doing the hard work and the legwork, having a truly great idea that's fundable. And so I think if anything, you know, maybe this is another call for more people. If you have a beautiful vision you want to see in the world, just do it. And probably the money will come if you do something good.
I mean, Presidio Bitcoin is literally that.
Exactly.
Because Wences and Mark approached me and a few others wanting to create Chaincode West, which ultimately became Localhost. But we also convinced them to do Presidio Bitcoin, which is a very big initiative. And, you know, it was like us and a few other people who created a vision, and here we are.
Yeah. So vision is more important than money. The money will come.
But last thing on the funding, I think there's a report about a year ago from Dan O'Pray and one of his colleagues showing that explored the funding of Bitcoin Core specifically and who donates. And, you know, Jack just like dominates the funding picture, which like, you know, obviously credit to him for how generous he's been, and also credit to him for how hands off he is. There's certainly he's invested money, or
he's one funded of
where where he doesn't necessarily like the direction of some of the people doing certain things, but he's very hands off. But it's disproportionate, right? It's unhealthy for Bitcoin to have one person be such a major donor. So for other people, like whether it's individuals or companies that have big bags, it would be much healthier for Bitcoin if they were at least collectively matching how much Jack is funding.
And also, to be clear, like, we don't know what people are doing anonymously as well. And we probably do know for some of these organizations, but
we have a pretty good, I mean, there's not like some hidden $50 million Bitcoin dev fund that we don't know.
It's secret. Well, I mean, and I was going to say, I mean, look, I mean, like, it's awesome to get back to Bitcoin, but I also think, and something that I hope I will remember if this ever, I'm in a position to contribute more, would be, do you remember like the Pineapple Fund? Remember how cool that was? They just like gave money away to like do, I don't know. Like, I just feel like in general, I think Bitcoiners are going to increasingly be in a position where they can do really cool things for the world. And it'd be awesome to see not just Bitcoin development, that's certainly one of them, but like more bold ideas that the status quo won't fund. I think that's one area where Bitcoiners can change the world.
Yeah.
That's the future. Yeah. All right. With that, we'll wrap.
All right. Good.
Thanks, guys.
Good chat, guys.
Sweet. Always fun.
Bye-bye.
Bye.